typically it would be a straight line if you graph it on the x-y. So A, B, and C are some particular coefficients, like in the stamp problem, I guess A was 60 cents, B was 35 cents, C was 695 cents, whatever it was. So those would be particular numbers that are given to you in a given problem. And once you have A, B, and C, then all x and y that solve that will have a straight, will be a straight line. If A, B, and C are all positive numbers, it'll be something like this. So that's the equation of the line. Now, any time you put in an x, you can get a y, and that'll be a solution. But the trouble with that is that y will rarely be an integer. And what you want is a positive integer. Now, you can see from the graph of a line like this, in order to get a positive integer solution, it will have to cross the point, it will have to pass through one of the points with integer coordinates, which it may or may not do. Even if A, B, and C are integers, you might not have any integer points on that line. So it's a very different ball game to be looking for integer, positive integer solutions than just any real number solution. Because for any real number solutions, you know that there are infinitely many, and it's rather easy to find them. You just plug in any value you want for x, and you get a value for y. Solve for y in terms of x in the mx plus b form. Now, one thing that you often do in mathematics when you're solving a problem involving an equation, it also happens in differential equations, is you have some way of finding a single value, which you call x naught, y naught. And let's suppose you find a single value that's actually an integer for our purposes. But whether or not these are integers, you can say, well, if x naught, y naught, I just say for now, are real numbers, are real numbers then satisfying the equation, then what you could do is run up and down the line using a parameter, what we call a parameter. And one way to do that is to say x is equal to x0 plus something times t, and y is equal to y0 minus something times t. And it's easy to show that if you put a b here and a here, then if x0, y0 are satisfied, then for any value of t, so will those.
The way that the problems are set up with a and b positive, does that mean it's always a negative slope line like that?
Yeah, if A and B are positive, then you will get a negative. Because in general, the slope, when you solve a line in terms of x, get into the mx plus b form, the slope m is going to be negative A over B. So if A and B are positive, that will be a negative slope. So there's only, if it has a negative slope, then there's only a finite part of the line that's in the first quadrant. And that's related to the fact that when we look for integer solutions, there will be at most finitely many. If A, B, and C are positive, and there are integer solutions, x and y, there will be at most finitely many. Finitely many positive integer solutions, non-negative solutions, because there are going to be only finitely many of the integer points that are in this finite expanse of the line. You could have situations, which I'm not going to get into right now, where A and B have opposite signs, and in that case you could have infinite numbers. Okay, so, if then change y by subtracting off the same multiple of this number a, the net result is to get cancellation, so you're still on the line. So we call this, is sometimes called a parametric equation for the line. That is, p can be anything at all, and you run up and down the line as p takes all real values. So if you understand about parametric description of a line in the plane, and this is something that's often studied, not necessarily using this notation, but I think maybe in Math 126, or there's some discussion of parametric. So it is a standard part of calculus and of basic mathematics to describe curves. There are basically three ways to describe a line. One way is in the form y equals mx plus b. That's sometimes called explicit, y in terms of x. Another way is implicitly by some equation that involves both x and y. This is implicit. And the third way is parametric. And that's true for many curves, like, for example, a circle also. You can describe it explicitly, y equals the square root of r squared minus x, plus or minus the square root of r squared minus x squared. You can describe it implicitly, x squared plus y squared equals r squared. Or you can describe it parametrically using an angle parameter or some other parameter. For example, x equals r cosine theta, y equals r sine theta. So there are three fundamental ways of describing a curve or straight line. And what I'm talking about now is the parametric way of describing line. The first way would be solving for y in the form mx plus b. This would be explicit, this would be implicit, and this would be parametric. Where parametric is in terms of some t that's allowed to take any real values, and if t takes any real values, you go up and down the line. So that's just background for what we do with integers, because what we do in the section with integers is closely similar to this. It's just it's a little bit different, but it's not that much different. So let's look at integer solutions. You first find an initial solution, x naught, y naught. So there are the procedure. So part A, I won't use 1, 2, 3 because last time I used 1, 2, 3 for the more detailed step. So I'll say part A is to find an initial, it's often called an initial solution, x0, y0, which are integers. And remember, the way to do that is to first find d equals GCD of A and B. And write, now you also check to be sure that that d is on c, and I'm going to assume it does, otherwise there is no integer solution. The greatest sum divided, if these two numbers say are divisible by 3 and this number isn't, then you're out of luck, you can't go farther. So let's assume that d divides, I'll put parentheses, assume d divides 3. Then in that case, you can write d in the form A u plus b v, or integers u and b. Now, if a and b are positive, then u and b are not going to both be positive. One won't be positive and one won't be negative when you do this. And so this involves the Euclidean algorithm. You have to use the Euclidean algorithm. Now, and then you multiply through by c over b just to get c on the left, because that's what you want, because c equals a.
That's why d has to divide c.
Yeah. Because otherwise you can't get c on the left. Exactly. So that way you get an integer solution. But they won't be what you want because they won't be both positive. So this you call x0, and this you call y0, and you've got a solution. So that's the first stage. And there's actually more than one stage involved. It's basically, the heart of that is using the Euclidean algorithm to do that. And then the second stage, the heart of the second stage is going to be to use inequalities, because what you get is x is equal to x naught plus b. Now it's not b times t, it's b over d times n. Or n is an integer. So you can divide B by D and still get an integer. And then you have to do the same thing for Y minus A. So it's what you would get if you replace T here by N divided by D. You replace N divided by D. See, in this situation, T can be any real number. In this situation, it can be any multiple N over D, and you'll still get an integer, because D divides B. You can multiply B by N over D, or any multiple of N over D. You can divide D by B, or multiply by any multiple N over D, you can do the same for A. Multiply A by any multiple N over D. Okay. So that's the same type of equation that you get here if you just replace T by N over D. So the reason why it's there's a D here and an N, N has to be an integer. Putting D in the denominator means N over D is not necessarily an integer. But the important thing is that what you get here is an integer. So this is also, these are integers. If you put some other fraction here with a bigger denominator than D, you wouldn't get integers. So we're only interested in integer solutions, that's why it has this form. The most you can put into the denominator is D. So N has to be an integer, and you can have a denominator here. Okay, and now it says the heart of part B of the solution is inequalities, namely you want both of these to be non-negative because negative solutions presumably don't have any practical value. And then you get inequalities. And so then it's a question of solving inequalities, which I would usually do by I like to get the coefficients of n positive. So if b and b are positive, then I'll bring this over to the other side, and here I'll bring this whole thing over that side. Then I have positive coefficients of n. And with inequality, trouble with having negative coefficients is that you have to remember to reverse the direction of the inequality when you divide out by that coefficient. It's easier to get to this, so I find it more convenient to work with it with a positive coefficient in front of the n, and then you just solve for n and the inequalities, and you find that n has to be between two things. Well, if there is a number between those two, something on top of the bottom, if there is an integer in there, then fine. If there's no integer in there, then no solution. If there's more than one integer, there can be more than one solution. Any questions before I do an example? Okay, so this is an example from an earlier quiz last year. So it says if you buy mangoes that cost 99 cents each, and grapefruit that cost 75 cents each, you end up paying a total of $36.03. But you don't remember how many you bought. Knowing what you paid and knowing how much they cost, how many of each did you get? So that's just a typical basic question to form. Let me go through this procedure here. All right, this is just sort of for background to understand what's going on, but it's not
on the test, we should not just use it.
More helpful.
Well, because you have finite and main points between.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, no, you can't. The directions on this type of problem will be that you have to do it using the technique in class in the textbook. In other words, you have to use the Euclidean algorithm. You have to find the appropriate end using inequality. You can't. See, one thing I should say in regards to particularly an exam problem is I don't want it to be an extremely tedious problem to solve involving humongously big numbers. So when I choose the numbers that they work out okay and don't involve tremendously big numbers, that also means that it might be possible to just do it by guesswork. Now, if you have really large numbers involved, you might be able to do it by guesswork. But in a small, relatively small problem, do it using the Euclidean algorithm and using these inequalities, because those are the techniques that work in general. It's true that if your numbers are small enough, you might be able to get the correct answer by guessing, but that's not what we're about. Okay, so solve this problem. You want to find out how many of each. So let's say you get F mangoes and Y grapefruit. Then what this says is that the information you know is that 99 times X, which is the number of cents that you spend on mango, plus 75 times Y, which is equal to 3,603. So that's the Dow-Hansen equation. And of course you want non-negative X and Y. And hopefully there would be a solution, otherwise you were given the wrong information, or you miscounted how much money you spent. Okay, so the way to do this is, first of all, to take these two coefficients and find the CCD using the Euclidean algorithm. Now in this case you can pretty much find the GCD by factoring. This is 3 squared times 11, this is 3 times 5 squared. So you know what to expect when you compute the GCD. But you don't want to just know what the GCD is, you want to write it in this form. So the part where you write the GCD in this form is crucial to solving the problem. So you use the Euclidean algorithm, even if it's possible to tell in your head what the GCD is. So you get 99 divided by 75, 75 times 1, plus 24, 75 divided by 24 is 3 times 24, plus 3, and then 24 is 3 times 2, plus 0, so this is the GCD. Okay? So we first divide this by this, and we divide this by this, and then divide this by this, and then we're done. The fact that we get 0 in the third line means that we back up a line and that remainder is the greatest common divisor. In check, 3 does divide 99 and divide 75. Now, if you go backwards, we write 3 is equal to 75 and 3 times 24. We replace 24 by going up a line to 99. So that gives us the final solution here, which is 4 times 75 minus 2 times 99 is equal to 3. Now we don't want 3 though, we want 3,603, which of course is divisible by 3. 3603, if we had a number of words that is not divisible by 3, there would be no solution. So we can get an initial solution by taking the 3 and multiplying it by 1201. In other words, multiplying it by 3603 divided by 3. So we want to multiply through by C over D, let's multiply through by 1201. And that will give us 3603 on the left. On the right, we get 4804 plus 75 minus 3603. By the way, it's good to check when you get this the quality is correct. 4 times 75 is 300, 3 times 99 is 397. So if you have any doubt here, you probably aren't too likely to make a mistake. But if there were more equations here, you might, and you could check by verifying that your final equation is in fact numerically correct. Any questions so far? Okay, so we're at just the left part A. So our initial solution is the X is there. 75 times 1. So we can write x naught is equal to negative this coefficient over d times n, and what you can subtract from this is this coefficient over 3 times n. Okay? Any questions? So now I'm going to part b. Section b. So we should do 0, 0, stop n. Okay, so from the first, you get 0.5 n division of the equation, 3603. And from the second, you get 48.4 I believe there's a set, well, okay, so n has to be greater than or equal to, this would be 1.4. But then someone comes along, they're doing market research, they want to know who attended this movie, how many, what proportion of those 100 people, what percent were children, seniors, and adults, intermediate age range, and you didn't keep a record of that. So here's the method to determine in this case how exactly how many in each category. Now, in the earlier problems I did, we had two unknowns and one equation. Now, if you're dealing with real numbers, when you have two unknowns and one equation, you'll get infinitely many solutions to most of them. But when we're dealing with integers, if A, B, and C are all positive in the equation on a straight line, if we need integer solutions, we'll only get a finite number. We're not going to encounter infinitely many solutions. But if you're working with real numbers, AX plus BY plus C has infinitely many solutions. So that's because there are fewer equations than unknown. If you have two different equations, then you have two lines that you want to know the intersection point, and there'll be only one solution, unless they're parallel, in which case there won't be any solution. So when you work with real numbers, the usual situation where there's just one solution is two equations and two unknowns. But in this situation, we have only one equation with two unknowns, and we still, in the last problem, there's one and only one solution. Now here, this is going to be an aquatic situation where we have three unknowns, namely the number of tickets sold in each category, that's what we're trying to determine, and how many equations do we have? Well, each bit of information gives us an equation. The total number of tickets sold gives us one equation, and the total amount of money pulled in gives us another equation. So this problem is going to be a problem with two equations and three unknowns rather than one equation and two unknowns. And just as in linear algebra, the way we solve it is going to be to reduce it to the problem we've already solved by eliminating one of the unknowns. So the method of solution is very similar, except that we have to, instead of having two equations and three unknowns, we're going to get it down to one equation with two unknowns by an elimination step. Well, first let's set up the two equations. And let's call X the number of children, Y the number of seniors, and Z the number of adults who are not seniors, who bought tickets. So, the first condition of 100 tickets sold simply says that the total of all these is 100. X plus Y plus Z equals 100. Then, the other bit of information is how much money we got, let's use units of cents, so it's 71,480 cents by taking 495 x plus 595 y plus 815 z, and I'm using units of cents, so I don't have decimal points. Okay.
Divide by 500.
Yeah. Simplify things, you can divide by 5 right off the bat. Not required, but that is a good idea. I put this one on top of this one so that I can, so that it's easy to multiply the bottom one by a certain amount and subtract from the top one. Okay. Because the coefficients here are 1. If you have an equation with coefficients 1, or with any one of the coefficients 1, it's easier to eliminate the variable. But first, I'll follow your suggestion and divide through everything by 5. Just add smaller numbers. It doesn't change everything. Just divide everything by 5, we'll get 99x plus 119y plus 170z is equal to 1,426. That's just dividing everything through by 5. Why don't I erase this? essentially eliminate any one of the variables that you want. I'll eliminate x just because it's just involved multiplied by 99. So 99 here, 99 here, 99 here, 99 here, and then subtract. You could, if you wanted to, multiply everything by 170 and subtract to get rid of z. If you just like working with x's and y's rather than z's, you could do that. But I'm not. I'd rather just subtract a smaller number. So it's just a matter of preference. There's no right or wrong about which variable you want to eliminate at this point. Because in this particular type of equation, all three of the variables have coefficient 1, so it's easy to eliminate whichever one you want. Okay. So, if you had two equations where you didn't have coefficients of 1, it would be a little bit more complicated to eliminate because you'd have to multiply both equations 3 by something to get to one of the coefficients equal. Usually, in these problems, one, in the problem of the homework, you're going to have one equation that's two coefficients. Okay, so let's subtract to eliminate the x. So let's put 20y plus 71z is equal to 4,000. Now we're ready with this, and we're going to go through the same procedure as before, just the names of the variables are different. We're going to get y0 and z0 rather than x0 and y0.
That's not significant.
Yep, you're right. Which means the GCD is going to end up being 1. But that's not enough to help us, because we want to be able to write one in terms of 20 and 71. So again, the Euclidean algorithm only divides 71 by 20, we get 3 times 20 is 11, 20 is 11, 1 times 11 is 9, 20 is 1 times 9 is 22, 9 is 4 times 2 is 1. And then we go back. this case, we'll have a certain range of values. Let me just, maybe instead of giving all the details of the computation, why don't I just outline what we do, and then I'll give the final result in a second. But what you do, you can make a table, and you finally get n in a certain range. There are various n values that are allowable. Hopefully at least one. So you write all the n values that are allowable in these solve those equations. And for each n value, let's say there are three, you get a corresponding y and z. And they're both going to be non-negative. So you can have more than one possibility as far as this equation goes, involving y and z. But remember our original equation, which is x plus y plus z equals 100, we also need the sum of these three unknowns, these three amounts, is 100, which means that you can also find f, which x is 100 minus y minus z, and this also has to be not zero. So not only do we need n's that give y and z non-zero, give non-zero y and z, these inequalities, when we find the n in a certain range that make both y and z non-negative, that's fine for y and z, but we also need 100 minus y minus z to be non-negative. In other words, if y plus z adds up to greater than 100, then there's no x value. There's no positive. There's no non-negative x value. And in a lot of these problems, if there's one and only one solution, which there certainly should be one solution, or else your information is wrong. In a lot of these problems, there will be only one solution, but you won't find it quite at this stage. You have to make sure that you choose the solution that makes not only y and z positive, but also x positive and non-negative. And it turns out that the value you get, you find that y is 21, z is 56, and then x turns out to be 23. And that's the only solution. You see, there will be other possibilities for y and z, because these parameterized equations in terms of n show, one way to say this is that anytime you want, you can add 71 to a y value, if at the same time you take away 20 from a z value. So we can get another solution here by adding 71 to a y value and taking away 20 from a z value. We could even do it once more. We could add another 71 to the y value and take away 20 from the z value. So we could get all three of these pairs would be solutions to this equation. That is, if we add 71 here and subtract 20 here, we get the cancellation, so you still have a correct solution. So adding, you add 71 here and at the same time subtract 20 from z, you still have a solution. And if you do it again, you still have a solution. You can't do it again because then z becomes negative. Or you can't subtract 71 here because then that would become negative. So these are the possibilities you have if all you care about was y and z. But the reason why these two don't lead to solutions is because here, y plus z is greater than 100, and here, certainly greater than 100 as well. So x would have to be negative. So as far as the y and z equation is concerned, you get three pairs of non-negative even integers. That it is, if this were the only equation you cared about, then you not only have y equals 21, z equals 56, you'd also have those other two pairs, which are positive integers that make this equation whole. But you need x also to be non-negative, and that forces you to just look at the first one. Because here you have negative values mean, you start